Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
Yes, it's time for House Calls Vermont. Passive House experts Jim Bradley and Chris West are sharing their knowledge of new home construction and renovation and answer your questions. House Calls Vermont today brought to you in part by Hannon Home Center on Mason Drive in Waterbury, by Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard, with new locations now in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. By Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. By Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. By Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions, for all things basement-y. Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Northern Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. And by Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, polyconstruction.com. And right now, here's Jim and Chris, host of House Call Vermont.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of House Calls Vermont. I'm Jim Bradley, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Chris West.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And today, it's B-Day. No, not necessarily your birthday.
It's my birthday!
It's the time for basement discussions. B for basement. So we're going to be talking about a very important part of your home, whether it's a basement or it's a crawl space, and why that is so important from a structural point of view, also from a building durability point of view. We also look at a health and safety components, and along with that, the efficiency of your home and how a basement can affect that.
So we've done hundreds of audits here in Vermont, and one of the always joyful moments during an audit is climbing down the stairs into whatever it is under your house. So, well, yeah, the first thing we do is we say, what does the nose know? And we get a feel for what's going on in there based on what we're smelling, because things that smell and make you go, hey, what's that smell, are things you should probably look into. But the question, let's start from the basics, right? What are the different types of basements? And not just basements, but foundations in general. So we have no basement, right? You have something on piers. You have an unconditioned space with a conditioned space over it. Even a tuck-under garage is similar to this, but not in this particular situation. We have crawl spaces, which are actual basements, but not really tall enough to stand up in.
And sometimes the forgotten space, the crawl space is.
Then we have your full-height basement. And out of those three, the having it a slab on grade is another option where you don't have a basement at all.
And with that, you know, some people would say, oh, you can treat a house because the basements are all going to be similar. But a lot of the housing stock in Vermont, what we've seen, is where people have done various types of additions. So you may have a crawl space that's connected to a full height basement that's connected to maybe a slab on grade.
Hey, wait a second. There's only one kind of basement in a house. You never have more than one kind of basement.
Well, some may say that, but we have found things to be a bit different. And that can create a whole host of problems, not just with air infiltration, also with water intrusion. And so that can add to the whole component of how the house performs as a system and why we need to address these areas appropriately.
And again, we're at the B's of the ABCs of air sealing, so we just want to keep that in mind. We did attics, we're doing basements, next week we'll
do So how does that affect space. The how does a basement then, Chris, affect the overall performance in a building when you consider airflow?
Right. So we were talking about the stack effect. The stack effect is that warm air rises and pushes out of the attic areas. You have a attic hatch, or you have a drop down stairs, or it's just not very well air sealed. All the little penetrations, the top of plates of framing, that's where air gets out. Well, that air leaves, and that creates a low pressure that has to be balanced. So that low pressure infiltrates or gets more air through the perimeter joist in the lowest place. That's where the pressure difference between where it's leaving and where it's re-infiltrating is the highest. And that's what we'll be looking at as far as air sealing. We want to make sure that we're reducing the air leakage at the perimeter joist. And the perimeter joist, if you don't know, is what happens at the top of that basement wall, whether it's a cinder block wall or a concrete wall or whatever, a rubble wall. On top of that, you have a piece of wood that then starts the wood part of the structure, if it is a wood house, which most are. And that's where we're going to have that leakage. I just want to throw out the number. So if you have a question about your basement or any building science question, call us at 244-1777 or 877-291-8255.
So basically, when you come to basements, when I lived in Florida for many years, it was rare that you would find a house with a basement. In fact, I think I saw two homes that actually had a basement. Other than that, they were slab-on-grade, monolithic slabs with a small footing.
Isn't that because of the alligators? They don't want alligators in the basement?
Alligator intrusions. You still get that, and you still get that with snakes, too. That's why nice not to be in Florida. But the when you consider the
basement... Nothing against Florida in general, okay? We like Floridians in Florida, but yeah.
But with that, the basement types that you have in Vermont, in our climate, in climate zones 5 and 6, are going to be some that you've actually dug into the ground because of frost. And so once you've dug down 4 feet to get below frost lines, maybe 5 feet, then you're going to say, well, why not just dig a little bit deeper, and I can go ahead and get a full-height basement. Some people stop and just get the crawl space, or like with a raised ranch, you have half of the foundation or half that lower floor in the actual ground, and then the rest of that is above ground, and that becomes an actual living space at that point.
Which also is walkout basements. You have some people with full-house basements, and then they have a door there that's a walkout, and that's a change in condition.
And so with that, the type that we'll see most, or the oldest house of the housing stock in Vermont, would be a rubble foundation.
Foundation. Rubble? Why would you build a house on rubble?
Because it was lying around in the fields, and it was an easy building material. Not necessarily easy. You still had to move those rocks in place, but it was a way to get started.
And people call those stone walls often, but we don't. In the industry, it's called a rubble wall, just so you know.
And we've seen very good walls like that. We've seen very bad ones. We've seen some where they've taken the time to parge or fill in the cracks in between the actual stones, and other times where they've left it open to where mice in a super mouse highway can come in and out of the house along with air. And when that air is coming back in, it picks up some of the nastiness that are in the cracks and crevices and puts that into the airstream. And that's why you're not just trying to seal the perimeter joist bay, but you're also trying to prevent the air coming in through the stone.
Right. So we have a rubble wall. We have a CMU, which is just a technical term for cinder block, and those can either be filled or hollow core. In general, when we see a CMU being used in a residential situation, they haven't filled the holes in the CMU with concrete. And that's when, as we spoke last week, we have to be careful about insulating, but we'll get into that. There's also poured concrete, right? You just pour it. But those often use these metal ties. And those metal ties rot and rust over time and can later, once that's rusted and gotten destroyed by rust, that can be a place for water to get in.
It happened to my basement. You know, there was one day, my house was built in 1989, and about 20 years later, I found that there was water leaking through these holes where the ties were. So it's a simple solution. Either at the time when a house is being constructed, if your concrete contractor, if you have them ensure that they're going to break the ties off and also seal over those, that's the best measure to address it at the forefront of the house build. Or afterwards, if you find out that they didn't address it, there's other parging compounds or sealants that you can use to stop that water infiltration.
And what type of, those are acrylic-based, we like the ones, right?
Acrylic-based is usually easier to work with, yes.
Okay. And the last type of wall that we'll talk about today, just throw it out there, is an ICF wall. That's an insulated concrete form.
Lego blocks for adults, basically.
You just stack them up, pour the concrete in the space between, and it automatically has insulation on the outside and inside. There are a couple of very good companies that have these. You can get them here in Vermont. If you're interested in finding out more about that, get in touch with us, and we'll throw you some information about that.
And what those allow you to do is basically save a lot of times on putting up forms that you would for a standard poured concrete wall, and you can actually stack these blocks. They're usually white and colored, and they have they're toothed just like a regular Lego block would be, and you stack those on top of one another, and then you just pour them solid with concrete. And so it makes the construction time, the setup time, very easy, but at the same time, you're going to get both sides of your walls insulated very well.
And even the smallest or the thinnest R value on those is usually about 2.5 inches of insulation on either side. At 4 per inch, that turns into an R20, which is a decent basement insulation value.
So, you know, these are the different types of basement walls for sure. And now what we should do is probably talk about how do we address a basement and what are some of the specifics that we need to be concerned with when it comes to moisture intrusion and how do we deal with that. Some people would say, you know, it's the old wives' tale. Definitely vent your crawl space. You know, you want to do that or vent your basement during
gotta the... Got to have fresh air down
you
there.
You got to have it because all winter long it's been closed up and it's just been building up. So let's let all that air out. The problem is you're letting the warm, moist air inside at the same time and thus exacerbating the problem because when that warm, moist air comes in carrying moisture and it hits a cooler surface of the basement wall or floor, it releases that water and thus you're increasing the moisture level, which leads to a whole host of other problems.
So venting, we don't do it to basements. We don't do it to crawl spaces. You can't do it to a slab, so we don't have to go there. But what else do we have to look at when we're in that basement? We have to look at what's on the ground. So when we're looking at any building signs situation, we're looking at what are the materials and how do those materials deal with air infiltration, with moisture, and how do we make sure that moisture doesn't get built up? Because remember, the villains here are mold, mildew, and wood rot. And those things need three things. Two of the things we like with them. We need temperatures above 40 degrees. Yay! And something around 80 degrees really makes, or 70 degrees really makes mold and mildew and all those things very happy. We need a food source. So something organic for that to eat.
Like the framing material.
Like the framing material. And we need, finally, moisture. So usually we can't control what the material is and we can't control whether or not, I'm dropping my thought here. What we need to do is make sure we reduce the moisture. That's the only, the air infiltration. We can stop the air and we can, stop the materials or choose our materials. But what we can't do is we have to be able to work with moisture. That's what we're looking at. So what's on your floor? Oftentimes we walk in and we'll see dirt on the floor. Or we'll see a cracked rat slab. Rat slab is a very thin layer of concrete. And as long as it's contiguous, it's usually pretty good, but they're often not in very good condition. We've also just seen sheets of plastic in various bits that aren't taped together, so don't make a contiguous barrier on the ground. And that's what we'd be looking for as far as moisture mitigation in a basement. We have a call. We'll get back to this in a second, but we have a call from Heather in Burlington. Heather, how can we help you?
Hi, I'm looking for some advice on improving moisture and air quality problems in my fairly tight ductless house.
Your very tight ductless house?
Fairly tight. I think we had a blower door test and our number was 840.
How old is the house, Heather?
The basement and the first floor are 1950,
okay.
And the second story is from 2012.
So when you had work done, did you have work done to weatherize the house more and stop some of the air infiltration?
Yep, the windows on the first floor are pretty new vinyl, mm-hmm. And we added Sensex cellulose, and the basement we... insulated with Roxul.
Okay.
And what are some of the problems that you're noticing? You said there's a moisture problem?
Yep.
And where do you see that identified? On the windows, maybe? Or on mold somewhere?
Mold on our windows.
Mm. Mold on your windows. Okay.
Yep.
Do you run not a dehumidifier, but do you have like a humidity sensor or what's called a hygrometer? Do you have one of those set up in your house to see where that humidity level would be, the relative humidity?
Yes, we have two.
Okay.
I'm going to ask my spouse because he monitors those. We do have a dehumidifier in the basement. And the problem is worse in our bedrooms. We also have been measuring CO2 levels. Mm-hmm. And when we go in there and sleep or go in and close the door and work all day, then the CO2 levels get to be like 1,500 or 1,600.
Okay. And so with that, in the basement, what is your basement floor and what are the basement walls? I suspect they're probably either CMU block or concrete, but what is the floor?
The floor has cement on it, but it's pretty broken up. We put in a perimeter drain a few years ago, and before that, we would frequently get water in there. So,
understood. But do you think that you've dealt with the water effectively at this point? As far as the groundwater,
flooding down there anymore.
Okay, that's important. Yeah. So you had a French drain put in, and you have a sump pump, and that seems to be stopping your bulk water issues.
Yes, but the floor gets moist. If you put something on the floor, it'll get moldy. Hey, what's our average hygrometer reading? Yeah. Average 40s, maybe.
Okay.
40s.
So those are not high numbers. Yeah. Well, we're looking for a humidity between 30 and 60%. So as long as your numbers are sitting in there, okay. So you've made the house very tight. You say you had a blower door test and you're around 840 CFM. Did the person who did the blower door break that into an air changes per hour for you?
He probably did. I don't have my hands on that.
Okay. Well, there is a question of making a house too tight, right? If you have a house and you've done things to it to make it tighter, which increases the efficiency of the house, it's also going to reduce how quickly and how often we're changing the air in there to get rid of moisture, right? And did you have a mechanical balance vent, mechanical ventilation system put in when you do this? Or are you guys still using exhaust only, like bath fans
We put in... since we don't have any ducts, we heat with a pellet stove. We put in two bathroom fans, and we have a timer. So actually we started out having them go on for maybe 20 minutes, an hour, and then we just realized we can change that. So now they're on full speed all the time.
Wow.
And it has improved the CO2 readings, but... the other thing I'm worried about is our radon levels in the basement are, since we insulated, the last test we got was 4.9.
Oh, that's above. That's above the four,
so
which is the max.
Then we did the living level test, and that was below four. But now that we're sucking air off, I'm wondering if it's coming from the basement.
So Heather, what you've done is you've identified the importance of looking at the house as a system when you're doing new construction, but also when you're doing renovation, because you're dynamically changing how the house has been performing previously and how it's going to perform in the future. So you need to basically check all the boxes. And the more important box here for me is going to be making sure you get fresh air quality. That's going to be making sure you're dealing with particulates, you're dealing with the moisture, and that's where we would usually go with an HRV or an ERV, a heat recovery or an energy recovery ventilator. And they're in a renovation. Go ahead.
We got a quote for one, and it's not in our budget.
Yep.
Okay.
We don't have ducts.
Have you looked at a Zinder product or possibly a Lunos product? Both of those are made for ductless insulation. You don't have to breach all the walls.
Lunos.
Okay. Lunos is one, but also I'd look at the Zinder Comfo Air 70. And if you go on Zinder's website, you'll see that. And I have two of those installed in my house, and they usually treat up to 600 square feet. And what I did with an indoor air quality monitor, I was able to register or monitor it and then turn up the levels till, you know, they have 1 through 4 setting, and I was able to turn it up to 2, and then I was able to get it to where it operated appropriately for the CO2 levels and particulate levels.
Okay. Zinder Comfort Air 70?
Comfo Air 70, yes.
Yeah. And what it seems to me is that your question is got a lot of different bits in it, right? It's got a basement with radon and moisture. It's got your moisture on the windows. All those things are important, but we have to give you more advice than what we can do on the format for the show. So if you can send us an email to housecallsvermont@gmail.com, housecallsvt@gmail.com, we can go deeper into exactly what we think. And thank you for calling, and we'll make sure we get you all that information you need after that email.
And Chris, I just want to revisit, like we were doing at the break, about the previous caller, Heather, and some of the work that she had done. You had a few thoughts on that as well?
Yeah. So what Jim was saying is that the complaints that Heather has come in with to discuss with us seem to have been partially caused by some of the work that was done. They made the house tight, and in that tightness, they didn't double-check what's going on with the radon in the basement. That should be mediated immediately. We should put in an active radon mitigation strategy in there. And we have this problem with the windows. So windows were put in, but what windows were put in? If your R value for the windows you're putting in is not going to be low enough to reduce the to increase the temperature of the inside pane of the glass above the dew point, you're going to get condensation. There was something that I didn't get a chance to ask Heather, what I'd really like to know, and I'll get that through the email and get back to you all, the listening public here, is she said she had windows put in, and those new windows were vinyl, but that would be on the second floor. That's where they had the addition done. The mm-hmm. windows, I'm assuming, in the bedroom, which is where the mold is happening, are probably a wood frame window, like an Anderson Super Low E or something like that. And that's where she's getting the mold issues. I'd like to see a picture of that window. I'd like to see where the mold is collecting. There are certain things diagnostic they would have to dig in deeper to be able to give better advice, but it seems like she needs balanced mechanical ventilation and radon mitigation at least, if not also some kind of real moisture barrier on the basement floor.
And that's why these projects, and that's why we have the show, is that these projects don't have to be overly complex, but you still have to look at the house as a system. If you fail to do so, some of the good work that you're trying to do to save on energy bills or just build a new room or whatever can actually end up costing you more on the other side. So let's get all the information up front. Let's address all these areas appropriately and make sure that you can avoid these problems. For now, though, we have Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont joining us on the phone for this week's
Efficiency Vermont spot.
Exactly. Thank you. Hey Steve. Steve, welcome.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, sir. You?
I'm doing all right.
How's that renovation going?
Yeah, we heard you took our advice last week and actually were doing your own DIY project.
That's right. So deeply involved that I completely forgot to call you all. But we're there to making hay, right? When the sun shines.
Exactly.
Trying to wrap up the outside work. So
yeah.
I'm hoping today is a successful day in that effort.
Yeah. Good. Sure. So we're doing basements today. And we were just...
I'm thinking this would have been a great episode for Halloween for you guys.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that was our first one, the scary basement. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, as a contractor, Steve, before your life with Efficiency Vermont, I'm sure you've seen plenty of basements or built those or whatever. What are some of the things that you would have as a takeaway from your experience with basements?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've spoken to some of the factors is, you know, you've got to think about everyone as being unique, especially with older housing stock. You know, newer housing stock, you have a little more consistency in some aspects of the building that are, you know, somewhat manageable. You know, as we get into older basements, older foundations, you know, it can be a little more challenging to work within, you know, between the soil and exposed dirt and water moving through and crawl spaces. You know, what you don't want to create is situations where you're trying to improve on one aspect of the big picture and then unknowingly creating a worse problem in another area. That caller, you know, has been doing, seems like everything right, you know, to try to address issues that they knew they had to deal with. And being aware of all the factors that could come into play at the outset is certainly important. And the radon piece, you know, that's another factor that it doesn't necessarily affect everyone, but there's certainly regions within the state that radon is a significant issue. And you know, making sure that if you are going to be tightening up the house, that's something that is known and addressed or mitigated. So, as a part of the conversation here, I think everyone should be aware of the, you know, Department of Health. Vermont Department of Health has some great radon resources and maps that show some of the areas in the state that are a little more prone to having high levels of radon in the soils in those areas.
Yeah, and my experience with radon is it we can have a high radon reading in this house and go next door and have a really non-existent radon reading. It's so site-specific.
Yeah, certainly. So, as are the conditions you find with moisture and water movement and everything like that as well within a basement in an older house.
Yeah. Well, I know one thing that I've appreciated over the years dealing with Efficiency Vermont is that one of the expectations that Efficiency Vermont has for their home performance contractors is to address not just the efficiency of the building. It's not just about putting more insulation in or just making the house tighter, but to look at it as a system and address the health and safety components first. And I think that's just so important, because if you're doing great work and yet you're creating, you know, really a horrible situation for the indoor air quality in the building occupants, you're not really serving anybody's interest appropriately.
Yeah, and that's where the expertise of as well, and when you've mentioned the ABCs of weatherization, attic, basement, center, you know, that's where it comes into play, where sometimes you may have an attic that's really in need of improvement and the basement as well, but sometimes there may be factors, you know, that are extreme enough or problematic enough that those need to be addressed as a priority, so that once you do the attic work, you're not creating a situation where you're capturing more moisture than you were in the past. So,
exactly.
Yeah, health and safety is, you know, indoor air quality obviously is on everyone's mind right now.
Yes.
For good reason. And, you know, this is a big thing to be considered of, you know, trapping what we have and we're creating, you know, as contaminants in our environment within the house, but also understanding where we're getting that fresh air that we want to breathe. And ideally, we don't want to be pulling it through a 200-year-old crawl space and
sure.
But why not?
You know,
it's
whatever else has come through as well over the
century. Right. It was fine for my ancestors. Why isn't it fine for me?
So, Steve, in the interest of time, real quick, where would somebody go in Vermont, if you could help us out, to find one of these home performance contractors, you know, through Efficiency Vermont? What's the website address? What would they be looking for? How would they navigate that page?
Sure. So the easiest way to find it is go to efficiencyvermont.com, and on the main landing page, you'll see a heading for Find a Contractor, and you can click on that, and then it'll ask you what type of contractor you're looking for, and you can look for, it'll give you a little drop-down menu to choose from, so you can pick the insulation, air sealing contractors. And then it'll ask you to put in your zip code, and once you put in your zip code, it'll pop up all of the partner contractors that are in your immediate area, in proximity. And it'll give you the full list, but it'll sort it based on closest proximity to you.
Excellent.
So that's a great way to start. And then also on the website as well, you can find resources that kind of talk about some of these considerations about indoor air quality and moisture and some of the ways to mitigate those problems within a building, you know, some ways to evaluate some of the conditions that you have as well. So there's plenty of resources there as well if you want to take some time to dig into it.
Great, Steve. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We'll be back in touch next weekend when we will be dealing with our next topic, which I believe is indoor air quality itself.
It is.
So, conditioned spaces is next week. After
spaces.
That, is that.
Okay.
So, Steve, you have a good weekend, and thank you so much for calling in.
All right. You too, both. Take care.
All right. Bye for now.
So we were talking about, at the very end, before Heather called in, just finishing up the moisture on the floor there. If we have moisture on the floor, how do we mitigate that? And in the basement, we have the options throughout there were rat slab, dirt, poured floor, broken up slab, which is what Heather said she had, and plastic on the floor. And we had a caller last week, Michael from Middlesex, who was talking about having a crawl space. He had plastic down on the floor, but it wasn't taped at all. So if you're going to be doing it, and it was just regular plastic, we recommend using something called Silverback or ClearSpace. These are both thick barriers that are put down on the ground and are either a 12 mil if you don't think you're going to be walking on it, or a 20 mil, which is reinforced, which you can walk on and not worry about ripping it up. And those we put down and wrap up the sides and make sure that it is one contiguous piece. Oftentimes you have three or four pieces of this material be put on the floor, and some people say if you overlap those by 6 inches, you're good. No, it has to be taped with a proprietary or an acrylic based tape that will stay in place.
Which is really a bonding agent. It's not just a regular off-the-roll type of tape. It's,
exactly.
It's made to work with the actual product and bond to it very aggressively and stay in place at the same time. One thing that I think is really important here to address, because it goes back to Heather's question, and it goes to these different types of basements where you have a broken floor system or an uncovered floor system. People will say, well, I don't have standing water. I guarantee you still have some type of moisture intrusion to that space. And I would hesitate to ever insulate a basement without addressing an open floor system, whether it's a broken floor system, whether it's a dirt floor, whether it's a wet floor, whether it's a concrete floor with water in there. If you've got this type of an issue, you're asking for really bad consequences on the other side just by trying to make the home warmer. And so make sure all these are addressed appropriately first and foremost. And I would say before you insulate, do the proper test. Check for radon mitigation or radon accumulation. So see if you have to have a mitigation system. Check and see if you have high levels of water intrusion with high humidity levels. And how are you going to address those if it's coming from the slab or the perimeter? Having those things put in place, you know, that look to a professional to offer some of these services, like a Matt Clark from Northern Basement Systems. There are some DIY opportunities out there as well. But having the tired old sump pump that the water kind of gets to, but not really, it runs a lot seasonally and you're always concerned about that, or you have the dehumidifier that's from the 1980s because it still looks like wood paneling on the sides and it runs all the time. It's just increasing your electric bill and it's not really serving your purpose well.
Yeah. So in that water mitigation, and the slab is a big deal, or the lack of any kind of moisture on the floor is a big deal, but we see seepage coming from outside the wall coming through as well. We've seen people who have put spray foam on a rubble wall without first making sure no moisture was coming through it, that we weren't getting water migration. And that can then get behind the insulation, soak that insulation, and that insulation is not doing anything. So when you're dealing with walls, if you have a cinder block wall, you need to make sure that you might want to put some kind of barrier on that, whether that is a clear space or whether that is one of these latex type barriers that will be painted on and will reduce the flow of moisture or bulk water through that. That's important. If you have standing water, putting in a French drain, that's a good way to go. The idea of making sure that your perimeter drain on the outside of the building is properly set up and going to be taking bulk water away from pressure against the wall, which will reduce that infiltration as well.
Because the structure of a basement is important as well, and I know when Matt Clark joins us in just a few minutes, we're going to be able to talk to him about this, is if you've got whether it's a concrete wall that's started to crack, or it's, you know, the outside pressure is pushing on it, making a wall deflection, or you have CMU, concrete masonry units, doing the same, or even a stone foundation that is suspect when it comes to a structural integrity standpoint, you have to make sure those things aren't just spray foamed over or covered up, just like I wouldn't want to put vinyl siding over old siding and call it good, or a roof over an old roof without taking the roof off and inspect what's there. You have to make sure that structure is first and foremost sound and functional.
We were in a house not so long ago where the seller actually purposely covered up a number of flaws in the basement with wood and other types of things. And after the house was bought, because the inspector didn't find this, when the builder who was asked to come in and help with the building took apart the parts of the basement that were covering the flaws, there was a rotten 8x8 beam under there that has to be replaced. It means the whole house has to be lifted. It's got to be pulled out. A new one has to be put in. You have to figure out why that rotted, where that moisture was coming from, why it wasn't drying out. And so you got to be really careful not to cover up the flaws before they're fixed. Fix them first and then cover them.
Okay, so are we ready for our break at this time?
No, we've got another minute.
Okay.
We're talking about where to put the insulation. So we were talking last time about, when we were talking about the crawl space, when Michael called in from Middlesex, he was saying, I want to put the insulation in the floor. So imagine yourself, you're in the basement, you're standing on the floor of the basement, we've got these outside walls, we've got a floor, and we've got a ceiling, which is actually the floor joist, the floor above it. Where do we put the insulation? And the right answer is not in the floor. The right answer is on the walls, first of all, and we talked about if you have hollow core CMUs, only no more than 2 feet below grade outside. And then you can insulate the floor if you want to. It's not highly recommended because that is relatively warm compared to outside temperatures in the winter and can act as a warming source or a source of heat during the winter, relative heat. And that's where we put the insulation. You don't want to put the insulation in too many places either. You don't want to have what we call competing thermal boundaries. You don't want to have wall insulation, insulation on the slab, and insulation in this, the floor joists to the floor above, because then you're not getting the full use of the moist, of the heat migrating down into the basement from upstairs, which is what it'll do if it's colder up, downstairs than upstairs, or vice versa, the cooling effect in the summer of the basement cooling the floor upstairs.
You know, there was a customer that I had years ago in Jeffersonville, Vermont, where they've attempted so many different, it was the 1800s farmhouse, stone rubble foundation, some poured concrete, so, you know, conglomeration of basement types. They had tried in the day to actually apply wet pack cellulose to the basement walls, and then they had fiberglass in front of it. Both of those items will take on water readily, and once you have your insulator take on water, it then becomes a conductor, and it draws in the cold that you're trying to keep out.
And a mold factor,
and
possibly.
The mold, exactly. So everything was torn out. We established a great moisture barrier on the floor, because before there had not been. Stopped that moisture level from increasing inside the basement, insulated the basement walls appropriately, and it became a very nice, comfortable, clean space. And he noticed on a day that was 14 degrees that he was standing in the kitchen for the first time since he lived in the house without shoes on, and his feet were comfortable because the basement floor was not frigid.
We often hear after the fact that the things that we've done to a house or recommended be done to a house have the effect of making the whole house more comfortable. And that's one story. If we're going to put insulation on the walls in a basement, first of all, we have to make sure there's no moisture coming through that wall, right? And we got to make sure we have no bulk water or moisture rising from the ground. Then we don't want to put any kind of bat insulation against an outside wall. That's just a bad idea. If you insist on putting a fluffy, what we call fluffy, like a bat material, fiberglass or a rock wall, against the wall, you definitely want some kind of moisture barrier against the wall before you put that on. Our basic recommendation would be use a rigid insulation, something like a Thermax that has a fire-rated outside covering, so you don't have to then, you know, put sheetrock on top of it to make it a fire-rated assembly. Or if you're going to need or have the feel that you need to put fluffy insulation up, make sure you have a layer of a rigid insulation between the actual concrete or cinder block wall and the inside before you put that framing up for the fiberglass or whatever it is you're going to be putting in there, in order to make sure that we're not going to be feeding that with moisture. We've got Matt Clark from Matt Clark Northern Mason Systems on the phone to talk about basements. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well.
You know, I got to brag on Matt a little bit because, you know, I've been in this business for, you know, overall for about 30 years now, and I've been in thousands of homes in Vermont, and I've seen a lot of horrible situations in basements, and I developed a relationship with Matt from a professional sense with the work that he does probably about close to 15 years ago. It's been some time, and he has done multiple projects for our customers, and he's come in and corrected problems his company has where other people have done the work, and it has failed. And it really, the ethical way that he treats this and putting building science in play here as well, but also making sure that the structure is sound and then the work that the customers are doing, that their money is going into the right place. You know, it's just been really a great relationship, and so I would really recommend, you know, that some of the information he could give you on your house as well. So please call in with any questions that you might have. But Matt, you know, when you come into, it's great to have you, and when you come into a house with a basement, you know, what are some of the things that they're going to be the most important to you when you first look at a place?
Yeah, well, thank you, Jim, for that. Yeah, basements are a space that some people like to utilize, some don't. They kind of look at it as it's there, forget about it. We look at all areas of a basement as a center for, you know, all the utilities of the home are typically located in the basement. So number one is water intrusion. Water intrusion in Vermont, as you know, is definitely something that a good percentage of most homes have. So, you know, is there water intrusion? Is there active water? Does it leak at certain times of the year? And, you know, that's like the number one. The number two is, what are they looking to do with the space? Are they looking to make it a healthier environment, moisture, mold, Definitely are two things that we find a lot of in these spaces, so that's kind of the thing we're there to combat in a lot of cases. So moisture, mold, you know, we want to provide a healthy home for homeowners.
Yeah, I'm reminded, though, of the Chapin Orchard project that you did for us.
Oh, I remember visiting. I was there the other day.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. This old farmhouse where there had been so much, you know, air infiltration, moisture intrusion. It had rotted out a lot of the support posts inside, and it was a really comprehensive project. And this is one of those stone foundation as well that we came to learn of why that people would do it. It would also have a layer of brick inside at a certain point, and that was actually an attempt back in the day where you see this amalgamation of stone and brick. Where they're trying to utilize the brick as an air sealing mechanism, but it actually was a great cavity for the mice to run back and forth. And so in working with the customer, I know that he took out the brick and you guys were able to go in there and put the helicoil supports in and really do some incredible work to where it was a space where he would sit down there next to his wood stove, the homeowner, after it was all said and done. What were some of your takeaways from that project, Matt?
Yeah, that was a good one. We do a lot of those, the old farmhouses. Stone foundations, definitely, in my own home had the same scenario where they use the brick as an air barrier. And, you know, we had, long before I got into doing anything with spray foam, had our rim joist sprayed, and I'm sitting in my living room and still watching my curtains blow. And I'm like, what is going on? So we dove into it, and behind these spaces is such an air cavity to allow not just for the mice, but the air. The air just to penetrate and really keep the house cold. So that project was very involved. Lots going on there. Was a dirt floor. Had an old cistern in there that held water. I mean, that one just had everything you could ask for in an old farmhouse. That was contributing to the moisture and contributing to the rot and the, you know, uneven floors, I think they had moisture content upstairs where they were, I think, developing mold, if I recall. So, you know, it was a very involved project in that one. We ended up pouring concrete slab to give him a space that he could utilize, and a vapor barrier, foam, you know, it was very, very well.
The whole nine yards, as they'd say in the basement business. We have Mary from Waterbury. We want to bring her in. How's it going, Mary?
Good, thanks.
How can we help you?
I have a concrete basement, and the walls seem to have a skim coat of something. It's white. I mean, I'm sure it was put on to cover up the gray, but it's flaking. More than flaking, it kind of chipping off. And does it serve any purpose other than aesthetics, or does it have a purpose in terms of regulating moisture or something else? I'm just curious.
I have some thoughts on this, but I want to throw this, since we have the basement expert here, Matt. Matt, what are your first thoughts on that?
Well, my first thoughts are we 100% that it's concrete and not just a skim coating over a block foundation?
Yep. We've seen that.
I'm positive because I've had my oil tank removed. And behind where the oil tank was, it doesn't have this skim coat.
Okay.
Perfect. So they may have, somebody may have skim coated it because of, one, it starts to, you sometimes will have a efflorescence, which is a mineral deposit that will, moisture pushing through, will start to deteriorate the concrete, the facing of the concrete, and which can leave it pitting. And so the masonry skills may have come in there to kind of resurface the face of it. Which if you still have moisture, pushing through that wall, it very well could be flaking off, and, or it's what a lot of people would utilize, which is dry lock. Dry lock is a paint, that they apply to stop moisture penetrating. And sometimes it's applied a little thicker, and that very well could be what's flaking.
Yeah, that's where I was going. I was going to dry lock, which is a latex vapor or moisture barrier that you can paint on. But if you haven't dealt with the underlying source of the water, that's only going to last for so long. It's going to get behind and it's going to degrade that latex barrier and then cause that flaking.
And we've seen the same thing on the outside walls of a house where the siding, where it's been painted siding, you see it flaking the paint off prematurely because moisture's trying to get out. So I would definitely look at that first. I'd also have a question, Mary. Do you notice any water seasonally pooling at certain times, or have you ever tested the actual relative humidity levels in that space and where those levels might be?
I haven't tested the relative humidity, and there have in the areas where the where I do think it's probably this dry lock has come off. It's where I do have seasonal water issues, and it does seem to be applied. Actually, I'm in my basement as I'm speaking. It seems to be applied thicker in the area where the seasonal water.
Sure, because more is better.
Put it on there.
So, Mary, something that a building science professional or somebody like Matt, you know, a basement professional, all things basement-y, would be able to do is to perform a site assessment. It doesn't cost you anything. Put eyes on it and see, hey, okay, what are the underlying problems? What are the areas that need to be addressed to get rid of those problems? And at the same time, is there a way to make the building more efficient at the same time? Because keep in mind, 8 inches of concrete has the same resistance to heat loss or cold intrusion as a single pane of glass. So 8 inches of concrete is an R1, and that really isn't much. And so if you're going to address some of these problems, you can also update the efficiency at the home at the same time. What would you think about that, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. Moisture, obviously, we want to deal with the moisture first before we talk insulation, but, you know, that is absolutely the avenue we would look to go. One, identify, locate, and solve the problem, and then, you know, look at any other additional, accomplishments that you may be looking for.
Investigate, mitigate, insulate.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mary. Thank you for calling in.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, Matt, you know, when you've also gotten into some other projects and type of solutions for basement, and one thing that comes to mind is the house in Richmond where, as you mentioned, it was a symptom called a frostquake that was pushing in the foundation of a concrete foundation and causing deflection where it was jeopardizing. I remember it moved the walls above and allowing air to come in directly from outside, and you went in to correct the problems. And it was an extensive project, but it was necessary at the same time. Can you shed a little bit of light on that one?
Yeah, that when you have soils that are expansive, or you have water that can cool and saturate the soils, and we go right into our frozen months, the frost, if we insulate a wall too, and I think I heard you talking about it earlier, is you like to, you know, come down no more than 2 feet. And you know, we on certain style foundations such as block and rock see a lot of problems with even that in some cases due to that frost. So we want to be very careful when we look at these things and how we're going to address them. But that soil, you know, your foundation's acting as a barrier to the soils, to the external circumstances. And when those soil pressures get exerting the foundation, they can crack, move, lift, bow, and really wreak havoc on a foundation. So, you know, we want to try to minimize water saturation if there's valleys and roofs coming down and creating such a saturation where the soils are going to also get heavier. Water's not light. And then look at, you know, what do we have to do to stabilize a foundation? We do a number of different things for foundation repair, and we do a lot of stabilization, and some of it requires excavation, some of it doesn't. But it's definitely a problem that we've got to be aware of and something that we don't take.
Yeah, that frostquake, I remember that winter. That was a winter where it was wicked cold and there was no snow cover. And those two things together push the frost line deeper than it usually is. Usually the frost depth here in Vermont is between 4 and 5 feet, and there were measured depths that winter at 8 feet of frost.
Yeah, so, you know, it lifted, and what we think on that one there is it may have lifted it, and then when it had thawed out, it settled. And so the wall was starting to sink and basically not be at the original elevation that it was poured at. So it was a pretty involved project there.
So, right. Matt, you're based out of Middlebury, but you basically cover the entire state, and I believe some into New Hampshire and other states, correct?
We're out of Montpelier.
Montpelier.
Yeah. But you cover more than just the state of Vermont, correct?
We do. We cover about 80% of New Hampshire, and we travel across the lake to Plattsburgh and the two counties over there.
So how would somebody best find your company and how to get in touch with you should they have further questions regarding their basement?
Yeah, northernbasements.com and 855 dry time. It's really simple. We try to make it simple. And either a phone call to our office, you can go on our website, you can really research what we do, how we do things, and then sign up for a free estimate right there as well.
Excellent, Matt. Well, thank you for joining us this week. And everybody, I do suggest that you give them a call should you have any further questions regarding your basement or crawl space.
There's one point that we didn't come to right now, which I was thinking about when we were speaking with Mary. We've been in a lot of houses where you wouldn't expect there to be a huge amount of water piling up against the wall. And then you look out back and you see that there's a hill behind it. Mm-hmm. And that hill is the slope, the rain hits that, it all comes down and it hits your foundation. And if you don't have a well-functioning, not clogged perimeter drain with well-drained soils above it, that can come right into your basement. So it's something that I was thinking to ask Mary in Waterbury, how high is the elevation behind that wall? Is that something that's shooting water at your foundation? Is that something that can then also be mitigated to maybe reduce that? Just another thing in the mix.
And what we've had to do in situations like that is, especially in new construction, you want to make sure you're not creating a lot of hydraulic pressure. Because even if you put the black mastic on the outside, eventually that water's going to probably find a way in. Or your perimeter drain, could become blocked by root systems or whatever. So what we've done in times past when we've identified the soils as being super saturated, when there's water all the time, we'll put a curtain drain in that will actually bring the water from the hill as it comes down and force it around the house to get it away from the house so it doesn't increase the moisture load right up against the walls. And so being really sensible about that and making sure that your contractors identifying those issues for you are really important when you're considering new construction and how to remedy situations on existing structures.
Basements are so important. If you don't get your basement right, it really does affect how the rest of the building operates. That's that building acting as a system. I want to just touch base. We had a number of emails from callers or listeners from last week, and I just want to let you know we do answer these emails. We are interested. We have one in helping you with your questions. We had one from Mary in Randolph Center about windows and Bilco doors. It's the only thing we didn't cover yet, dealing with the basements. If you have windows, they're almost always these single pane sliders or these metal teeny windows that are set there, and they're always leaking air. It's a good idea if you have an opportunity to replace those with either a non-operable window if you're not interested in opening it, closing it off altogether if you're not worried or interested in having natural light down there, or replacing it with a good double pane window that would be right for that location, a vinyl window like a Wythe window or something like that. And then we have Bilco doors. So Bilco doors, I don't know if you know what that is off the top of your head, but if you ever walked up to a house and there's like a little wedge of triangle set up against the house and it's two doors, it goes to a stairway down that leads to a bulkhead door. Yes. That is the Bilco.
Yeah, a lot of people will call that wedge actually the bulkhead door. And we've seen those in place where you go down into the basement and you have a breach in the wall or a hole in the basement wall, but no door or no air barrier or no insulation barrier. And so that's an easy fix. That's almost like hitting a home run in T-ball.
I hit a home run in T-ball every time.
There, Okay. And so with that, by putting an exterior door there, insulated, weather stripped at that location, that goes a long way to helping the whole thermal profile of the basement. At the same time, to actually insulate that space, where it would be best, in our opinion, is if you have that type of a door, you can't really insulate that bilco well. So you need to separate that walk down pocket, if you will, from the interior basement space. And by doing that, you'd be using that type of an exterior door.
So the short answer is we don't insulate Belco doors. We go down the stairs to where the wall, the opening is to the basement, and we put a good insulated door there. Make sure there's a drain at the bottom of the area where the Belco is going to be letting some moisture in, so that will be taken out without building up against that bulkhead door building, and that's where we would put the thermal envelope and deal with the Belco door.
Well, it's hard to believe, but we're right up at the end of the show once again, and we thank you for those who have called in and look forward to speaking to many of you in the weeks to come for sure.
Next week, we'll be talking about the conditioned spaces between the attic and the basement. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to go to our YouTube page, House Calls Vermont on YouTube. We also have housecallsvt@gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, we'd be happy to answer that. Go to our website, take a look at some of the videos we've been throwing up. We're throwing up videos about the show and on the show. And until next week, this is Chris West.
And this is Jim Bradley. Enjoy the day.
House Calls Vermont has been brought to you by Hannon Home Center on Mason Drive in Waterbury, by Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com, by RK Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard, with new locations now in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield, by Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. And Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y. By Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Northern Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. And by Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all at polyconstruction.com. Do join us again next Saturday at 12:30 for House Calls Vermont.